Good afternoon. It is one bell of the afternoon watch, and this is your Captain Joe up in the captain's chair for our weekly get-together, our weekly muster. And it's a special program for me personally, as we have two of the ladies of the island, both of whom have written books and who are going to talk about their books today. My whole life, I've been surrounded by beautiful and strong women, and no more so is it today than it is today, because Susan McCabe and Cindy Hoyt are here with their books, and we're going to talk about their books, and I'm going to buy on air a copy of the book, and each one of them is going to write something pithy and significant in the book to their Captain Joe. Before we get started with that, though, my greetings today go out to all of us who have served in the Vietnam War. And the reason for that is that on Saturday, the 29th of March, was the March of 29 in 1973, was the day that the Military Assistance Command Vietnam was stood down and the last troops left Vietnam. The last American troops left Vietnam, left Saigon. And so this has been proclaimed and declared National Vietnam Veterans Day. And I thought that I saw Captain O'Brien, but of all of the people who are island people who have served in Vietnam, the two of them that are in this compartment together with you today are your captain and Captain O'Brien. There are a number of Captain Joe's people who were part of the Coast Guard presence in Vietnam, and I know that there are several who are shipmates of mine who served with me in the cutter that we deployed to the inshore part on the gun line in Vietnam. And so my greetings go out to all of us in particular who have served in that particular conflict. The binnacle list today is a sad one in that in this last week, we lost someone close to all of us who also struggled for a number of years fighting cancer, a very malignant, a bad form of cancer. And Ian died last week, and he was also very young. It's one thing when those of us who have accumulated a certain number of years cross our own bar. It's another when they are taken from us long before their time. So, in my own case, as has become our custom here, I give a quick report on how I am faring in my own particular journey, because many of you, if I don't report on that, send me a signal and say, how are you doing, Captain? And so the answer is that I'm doing really well. We're going to try later on this month to separate me from Mr. Foley, and if that doesn't work, then we'll just keep on carrying on. But I'm faced now with these two lovely ladies, and because Cindy Hoyt is both to my left and because she is the youngest of the three of us, youngest of the three of us. We're going to start with you, Cindy, ask you, first of all, to introduce yourself and then talk a little bit about your book.
Well, I am a lifelong dreamer, and not in the way that, you know, there's a thing you always want to accomplish and you work toward that for a long time. Although, I don't know, I have kind of slouched toward it for a long time, actually writing a novel. I've written a previous book, which you generously interviewed me for, on a completely different topic, which is basically how to protect yourself when you're in the sun, only told in the most unusual and hopefully fun way possible, because I like to approach life through a lens of fun. Ernest is great. We can never get along without earnest people. That is for sure. But it's sort of a, if there's ants and grasshoppers in the world, I'm sort of an ant at home and a grasshopper out at large.
Hmm. we could work on that particular line with some profit. But you said something in your introduction about dreams, and one of the things which is most important to me and of all of the ladies in my life who have followed their dreams, and in particular have started businesses, and along with starting businesses to accomplish and to fulfill their dreams, are the two of you who have written books. So tell us a little bit about what Lucid is about. And then I see you've got this thing set up to read us a sample.
Yeah.
A no doubt short and pithy sample.
Short and pithy, 45 seconds.
How's
that for pithy?
So tell us a little bit about the book, how you came to write it, and then we'll play your selection.
Well, as many people have experienced in their own lives, sometimes when you dream, you become aware while you're still inside the dream that you're dreaming. And sometimes this freaks you out and you wake up immediately, or sometimes you just kind of ride with it for a little while. And sometimes you can learn through a process of part practice and part just general awareness, you can learn how to maybe change the direction of the dream as a result, as once you realize what you're doing. So it's an unusual blending of consciousness and unconsciousness at the same time. And I have, to some degree, learned to do that. Lucid, therefore, the title of the book, is my protagonist, who happens to be, well, a disc jockey on a radio station on a small island in Puget Sound.
Mm. What do you know?
Odd coincidence there.
How could that have happened?
I dreamed it up out of the blue. And she's a rock and roll historian, but her show focuses on all the different songs, not just rock and roll, but mostly rock and roll, but throughout recorded history that have involved dreams, either in the title or in prominent lyrics. And she has themes each week on her show. She interviews someone who's a specialist in a particular kind of dreaming, and that could be precognitive dream, where some people think they have seen in a dream a future event and recognize it when it comes to pass. Or there are recurrent dreams, which is what my little clip is out of a section talking about that. It doesn't talk about it. It's just part of a scene that I chose for you because it's sort of nautical. Recurrent dreams, which are the dreams you have over and over again. And you wake up and you go, oh, that one again. And a lot of these, they can be life events, or they can be, as in my case, since I hail from Oklahoma, my recurrent dreams typically involve tornadoes. I have an aunt, Florida, hurricanes for her. Out here, earthquakes. So we're featuring in today's clip a section about earthquake coming in real life. And this just has always fascinated me because some people say they don't dream at all, which science has pretty much proven that's not true. It might just mean you're a very sound sleeper or you don't happen to wake up, because if you don't wake up during a dream, and it can be at the very end, my husband has had credits roll and then he wakes up. But if you don't wake up at some point during the dream, you will not remember it. You'll go back off into deep sleep land and you'll never know. So you wake up in the morning and go, well, I didn't have any dreams. And in all likelihood, you had at least 3 and as many as 7. And the fact that they're so trippy and so unrelated to our workaday world, including in terms of the laws of physics, has always fascinated me. Our minds are literally unchained. And what's not to love about that?
Really?
So we're ready to love a little piece of it, and I am going to make sure that I'm getting getting instruction from the ever lovely Susan.
All right, point of view director.
Let's see if we can make that one work.
Okay. I'll set it up when I, in retrospect.
While they work their way north.
Oh.
Callie's brain.
I forgot to say, this is narrated in a very professional way by my husband, Jeff Hoyt, who is an audiobook narrator and voiceover actor in general.
And what is his connection to Voice of Vashon?
He's also the program director here at Voice of Vashon.
Indeed,
and he and
he
I
is.
Did a show for many years called The Morning Scramble. And I don't know if we have enough volume. My headphones are a little wonky, so I'll let you guys ride the gain for me.
Never one to relish downtime. Did a little bushwhacking of its own. No matter how innocently it had begun, Callie understood that her dream experiments had culminated in a rift between her conscious and subconscious. She was being held hostage by her own involuntary reflexes. She had even hooked up with Stockholm Syndrome's twisted sister, because how could she not identify with her kidnapper when the kidnapper was herself? And now, running underneath all this new programming, the imagination that had started it all spun a continuous visual loop of Peter crushed under the bookcase, Vixie buried in three stories of pancaked school, Luke pinned beneath one of the old-growth monsters that flanked the playground.
It's as far as it's going to go.
You know, I'm afraid we had a tech issue, and that's entirely my fault. I raced back here from Lake Quinault early this morning, and the ferries out of Tacoma were so fogged in that at one, the entire ride, I never even knew which direction we were pointing. I wasn't sure if we were headed north or south. Foghorn going off every 2 minutes. So we
may not have had I heard a part of it.
Yeah.
We may not have had the full flavor, but tell me about how people can get this book, where it is being sold, and how people can get a copy. And then you're going to tell me how much it costs, because I'm going to give you cash for my copy, which you have brought.
Yes, I have. I'm prepared.
Good.
It's available here on the island at Vashon Island Bookshop, and it's available on Amazon. So you can just Google Cindy Hoyt Lucid, and you'll get it, or go to Amazon and do the same thing. It's paperback only, $15, but soon there will be an audiobook version because Jeff's finished the narration and he's laying in a few special touches, especially under the dream sequences. And basically, the track that you did not get to hear was what Callie's path is in the book Lucid, is that she's having lots of fun learning how to manipulate her dreams. But what that's doing is actually cutting into her subconscious mind's turf. And because the subconscious usually controls the lights out part of our day. And when she starts invading it with her conscious mind, it has no choice but to retaliate by invading in similar fashion her daylight hours. So she could be just in the middle of something. One time, in fact, she's sitting right where you are, Captain, and behind the microphone, and bam, she's somewhere else entirely. And so it's got a lot of thrills and spills and a lot of laughs, and ultimately she has to come to a reckoning and have a showdown with her own brain.
So I'm passing over a $20 bill, and I don't want any change. I want the change to be the down payment on a bottle of really good wine that you and Jeff will share, and as a remembrance of our time together. And in return, I know that you're going to write something for me in my copy, which I have now bought.
For $15. I forgot to mention that part.
There you go. And the extra is the down payment for the bottle of wine. And so now we're going to move over to Susan. And I have to say, before Susan gets started, is that both of these ladies have been friends of the captain's for many, many years. That we have done a number of things together for the good of the island community. And so it is a special treat for me to have both of you here. So, Susan, now your book. Talk a little bit about your book and what got it started. And then you're going to read a short but pithy part from that book.
Yeah, I'm trying to be short, and I'm not sure that the short one is all that pithy. But my book is called Hot Flashes, Cold Showers. And it started when I had kids, I guess, or even before. But I've been writing these essays for years. I did a one-woman show with nine of these essays in 2008, took a long break, and then started writing them on Substack. And it's now grown to about 60 or 70, I actually haven't counted, essays about life. Life's what I call educational moments. So a hot flash is when you experience something that tells you you were right, and it affirms something that you believe that's important, and so you're really happy about that. The cold shower is when you find out you're the problem. And there's a lot of those.
So this is not a collection of essays about women going through the change of life.
No, it is not.
Yes.
It's not. In fact, my younger son gave me the title in 2008, and it worked really well then. But now it's
a few years down the road.
And people wonder, is this about menopause? No, it is not. There's actually nothing in here about menopause.
What a relief.
Yeah, I can say so many things about that, but I won't.
Well,
no.
We both could. We have to have another show, though.
Yes.
Yeah, Captain Joe and Menopause.
Woo.
Yeah, that'll be a big hit. Yeah, with your...
I'm not so sure Captain Joe's people would be ready for that one.
I've got a great title, though.
Captain Joe and Menopause. So I'm going to read something that is seasonal and short. But I do want to say to our listeners that a lot of what I write is satire and sarcastic and... I hope funny, and some of it's not so funny. There are some sad stories in here. So it's really a mix of what happens in life, but this one is short. So it's called The Garden. January in the Pacific Northwest is deep, dark winter. The sun, and I put that in quotes, I use that term loosely, rises around 8 a.m. and sets by 4 p.m. The sky, water, and almost everything else, save the pine trees, blend into three shades of gray, and most of the time it's raining. Occasionally, a snowstorm offers a brief reprieve of white light. We're lucky to have the rain, of course, but with the dark gray and damp, all I want to do is nap. Hibernation seems like a natural practice humans should adopt from bears, though I can't seem to convince the working world to agree. Yet amid the dark and gray, there's a burst of vibrant color in one place, my mailbox. That's where the seed catalogs arrive. As soon as I open the box, the lively shades of fuchsia, purple, blue, yellow, and pink leap out at me. I rush inside, excited to start imagining the garden I'll create when spring arrives. This ritual carries me through February, helping me survive winter with dreams of the warming, earthy smell of the fecund soil. In March, I dig up the raised beds, turn the soil, add fresh compost from the year's collection, and sing to the worms. I scatter wildflower seeds in a dedicated patch and plant bulbs in the pots encircling our deck, ready to brighten our summer dining space. This is when I sow the hardiest seeds, peas, and my understood favorite, kale. Misunderstood favorite, kale. In our makeshift greenhouse, I start other greens, though my efforts rarely succeed, often yielding to the lure of veggie starts. Every year, I clean up the garden, plant some experiments, water, feed, and dig in a little hope. As gardeners go, I'm a sloppy amateur, but this winter ritual sustains me. April brings warm rains and tiny sprouts. By May, June, and July, I'm munching sugar snap peas, as I weed and harvesting greens galore. August offers the promise of tomatoes and berries, delivering only if it's hot enough. September shines as the Northwest's brightest and most beautiful month, overflowing with abundance. Zucchini time arrives, and islanders lock their car doors to avoid stealthy deliveries from neighbors' overproductive gardens. From April through September, I'm giddy with sunlit energy and the long, endless days, and then October sharpens the air, the rains return, and I feel the familiar dread. Winter is on its way back. Of course, I know it's coming, but spring and summer lull me into believing that warmth and light will last forever. Despite what we've done to disrupt nature's rhythms, winter inevitably returns, and I reluctantly settle into it. It is, after all, a good time to write. I remind myself we need winter to incubate our spring dreams, to let the earth rest. If only we could sleep through it like the bears, cradled in our mother's arms, trusting that spring will return once more. Was that short enough?
It was. Thank you. So hold up your book so that I can see the cover. And I'm going to say that both of these books are beautifully produced. And I'm looking at the wonderful cover to Cindy's book, Lucid, which has a salmon with a structure on it. And Susan's book shows Susan's back. And both of these are beautifully produced. And just to get the book for the cover would be worth it to me. So, Susan, here is for your book. And the same instruction that you use that, the change as a down payment on a really good bottle. No plunk, a really good bottle for you and Luke. Now, I know that Luke drinks beer and not
right.
wine.
This will be for me.
I'll help.
It'll be for you. So the two of you should
help.
Get, the two of you should get together because I know that you both are old friends. And so...
And between us, we could get a really decent bottle of wine.
And you could,
I'll say.
And you could get a really decent bottle of wine.
With as many sparkles as the cover of Susan's book.
So
yeah, besides my back, there are sparkles on here.
So each of you have said something which I want you to make a remark on. And that is that each of us has a story as to how we came to the magical Isle of Vashon and why we are here. Now, Cindy, I know that you and Jeff come from the Midwest, and in fact, you come from Oklahoma.
On a Harley from the sound effects outside.
Yeah, it sounds like it.
It is
thought maybe you drove up on your Harley.
It is indeed a motorcycle, and I believe that it is indeed a Harley-Davidson made in the United States of America. So what brought you from Oklahoma to here? And then, Susan, the same question is going to come to you because I know that you are, at least for part of your life, a California girl.
No, I've never lived in California. I am also a Midwesterner. I'm from Chicago.
Even more than do I want to hear about that. So we've got to move along in a smart and seamanlike fashion, but I want to hear, first of all, about Oklahoma and then Chicago by way of Los Angeles. Yes, you do. Come on, Cindy.
Well, who wouldn't want to leave tornadoes? We'll start with that. The South had some very beautiful places in it and some fun and interesting people, but I always knew those were not my people and was always looking to find them somewhere in the world. Later in life, I became a disc jockey, and then Jeff also became a disc jockey, and when we were ready to move from there, we looked around all of the United States, every single one, and eventually settled on either San Diego, Santa Barbara, or Seattle. And so one year, we just went through all three and spent a lot of time, and the people were here. This is where they were.
So when you talk about your people... I have my people. I have Captain Joe's people
yes.
all over the world. And it is a remarkable community. And when we go out searching for our people, in my case, they came to me. In your case, you were out looking for them, and you found them here.
I hunted them down.
And you found them here.
Yes, I was always looking for fun, interesting people who were curious about the world. And I'm not saying they didn't have those in the South. Absolutely not. But per capita, it seemed higher here.
I think I think that my identification with your reasoning is complete because this is my place here and I'm not going anyplace else. Susan?
I like your diplomatic description of Oklahoma, Cindy. That was well put.
I still grew got up friends in the who might be listening.
Yeah. I grew up in the Chicago area and traveled around the world for my work And a friend of mine had moved out here to Seattle, and I started visiting her when I could and fell in love with the green. And as it turns out, friends of hers, including Captain O'Brien, were living here on Vashon Island. And when I came here, I realized this was my heart's home. I have never lived in Los Angeles. My children live in Los Angeles. That's so I spend as much time as I possibly can there. Yeah. But I have never lived there. I'm not an LA kind of person.
So besides Chicago, where have you lived before you came to the Magical Isle?
That's pretty much it. Well, no, I've lived in St. Louis. I try to forget that.
Spent a lot of time in China and India.
Well, that was work, but yes, I traveled a lot. I traveled for many years in Asia, 9 different countries in Asia. That was travel for work. And, you know, conference rooms pretty much look the same everywhere.
But I would imagine that that's true.
But I've also been fortunate to travel in Europe and a lot of other places, and I love to travel. But no, living, I've lived in Chicago, St. Louis, and here.
Why is St. Louis, I think that's an interesting city because it's on, of course, it's on the Mississippi River.
Mm-hmm.
And it has that wonderful arc structure. Have you been up inside that?
Yes, I have. I have.
The gateway to the west.
I watched them build it. That's how old I am. When I was a teenager, they were building it when I lived there as a teenager. But my experience of St. Louis and the St. Louis area is similar to Cindy's experience with Oklahoma. Not my people.
So, honey, if you were going to say to me, I was there when they built the Washington Monument, I would say that you were old. But... I was there when they built, no, I wasn't quite there.
When they built the Washington Monument?
Yeah.
I would believe that.
Then I have more questions after we go off the air.
Well, go ahead and...
How do things get so crazy?
We have 2 minutes, so go ahead and ask one.
Well, what I have actually wondered is, you know, we've, in my short, as you say, young life of 69 years... I've seen so many things change that I never would have thought change. And I don't just mean in technology. I mean just in the way people relate to each other, for good or ill. And I wondered if someone who had a few more years than I do has seen, what particular change would you mention?
So I would mention that most change that I have seen is relatively superficial, and that people, human beings, are pretty much the same now. I went into the service when I was 17, and I have served this country since I was 17. And the people that I served with have essentially the same values and the same feelings of loyalty and dedication to that particular country. And before we came on the air, we were talking about whether or not the things that are happening in our country today are survivable. And my answer to that is yes, that they are. We're going to get through it.
Individually, collectively, both?
Both. All of the above. But it's only going to happen when people of goodwill retain their being goodwill people and not give up and not give in and not quit. So a friend of mine a few years ago, when I first became involved with Vashon Community Care, a friend of mine gave me a replica of the Don't Give Up the Ship flag. And every now and then, when I get a little bit tired, and both of you, you were out of town for my big 90th birthday celebration.
I was in Los Angeles.
Yes, you were in Los Angeles.
His friends are crazy.
So, but sometimes at 90, I get a little bit tired, and I get a little bit discouraged. And then I remember the ceremony at which I was presented with that Don't Give Up the Ship flag. And although I can't immediately put my hand on it, figuratively, in my dreams, Cindy, in my heart, I pull it out and I look at it. And I remember that all of the people who are Captain Joe's people all over the world expect and require me to climb back up in the captain's chair every time.
What a great takeaway for all of us right now.
And
hope, big hope.
We have indeed, and far too quickly, come to the end of our time together. The lovely ladies, my beautiful and strong friends who have written books that I am looking forward to reading. And we've come to the end of our time together, and we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. Cindy, until we meet again. Susan, until we meet again. Enjoy the really good bottle of wine. No plunk. The really good bottle of wine that you are going to buy and go and sit out in the sun.
Captain O'Brien is a good reference source for that.
He knows
the good
indeed
stuff.
He is. Yes.
Indeed he is. And so I am surrounded by three lovely friends, and those are part of the reason why I live here on the island.
Ditto.
And why I'm going to live
Ditto.
Here for the rest of my life. And we never say goodbye. We say until we meet again. And this is your Captain Joe. As always, I am on station and watching properly.